All right, we are going. Welcome everybody to Moedon Ivri, Club Hebrew. And we are on Psalm 32 today. Last week we got through verse 5, kind of the first half of the psalm. Notice that we stopped at that Selah, which can indicate a lot of things. Who, you know, no one's ever quite sure what that means, whether it's a musical interlude or a silence stop, some kind of a highlight. Let me go back to verse 5 to get us a running start at the second part of the psalm. So verse 5, if you guys will remember, in verses 3 and 4, he is describing something that's happening to him in very physical terms. We interpreted that word in verse 3, I was silent, to mean I didn't confess my sin or maybe admit it either to myself or God or, you know. So notice we're giving the verse a particular interpretation of his feeling of something happening to him because of unconfessed sin and feeling unforgiven. So notice how we translate or understand verse 3 as him physically having manifestations as to what's happening, and attributing that to the hand of Yahweh pressing down on him. So it's kind of an interesting description. And so notice in verse 5, if we read verses 3 and 4 that way, verse 5 is kind of like almost an idea, a kind of a light bulb went on in his head, probably put there by the Holy Spirit. So you lead with Chatati, my sin, I will make known to you. See, so notice I'm reading verse 5 as something he has resolved to do. Okay, so my sin I will make known to you, and my avoni, my iniquity, not will I hide. All right. Now notice how amarti goes with both halves of this verse. It's kind of like a hinge, I suppose, where the first line, so you could almost add onto the end, I will not hide, amarti, I thought. All right. Now it continues by stating it in a little different terms, I will confess concerning my transgression to Yahweh. All right. Ve'ata nasata, and you forgave the avon chatati. You forgave the iniquity of my sin. We noticed a couple of things last week about that line. The pronoun is not, quotes, grammatically necessary, but it probably now indicates a you. You know, as for you, you forgave it. And so notice what's implied here is what he said in verse 1, the blessedness of being forgiven. It's like we can already kind of connect the dots, a weight being lifted. It's like something that feels like healing, see? And that's why he's so expressive about it in verse 1. All right, so now having reached this point, he begins to talk about some of the implications of what he has experienced. All right, so we go to verse 6. Al zot yitpalel kol chaside leka le'et metzo rak l'shetef maim rabim elav lo yagiu. Right? On account of this, why is this feminine? Anyone know?
Abstract thought.
Good. Notice it's referring back to something abstract, namely his whole experience that is just recounted in verses 3, 4, and 5. So on account of this, now notice, because of how I'm translating and interpreting, I give this prefixed verb, yitpalel, a kind of exhortative force. Let pray. All right. And notice that this is just a hitpael from pala, of the root palal. All right. Let kol chassid, let every chassid pray to you. Or maybe he's expressing a wish. May every chassid pray to you. Chassid, now how are you going to gloss that? See, sometimes people translate it as a pious one or a devoted one, a faithful one. See, notice you can see the other root chesed in it. It's usually, you know, obviously it refers to someone who is in this particular relationship with God. So may every chassid, devoted one, will say, some translate it even as righteous one, pray to you. Now notice we have a real difficulty. This is probably the most difficult part of the psalm. Let 8, at the time of metzo. What is metzo?
To find.
To find, good. And notice the grammatical form is an infinitive, metzo. So it's literally at the time of finding. All right, now you have what causes the difficulty, and I think if you even look at the footnote that's attached to it, there are a number of, if you look under 6AA and then B, a number of suggestions for emendation. The Septuagint has different reading, and they're suggesting stuff. But if we just go with the Masoretic text, rock kind of just stands there, and you're not quite sure what to do with it. So it's at the time of finding. Now, rock means only, all right, or alone, but it can also have a kind of emphatic nuance, surely. All right. So some translations put it with the former group, with the 8 metzo. So let every pious one pray to you while he may be found. Something like that. You have to translate idiomatically. But notice what the Masoretes do. We're getting real technical here. But see the accent around metzo? You see that little caret deal above the mem and then a little slash under the zadi? That's called a olev vet yored. Olev vet yored. And it is actually, in poetry, a major disjunctive accent. Second to an atnach. All right, so it's kind of almost on an equal level with the atnach. Now, you will notice that usually the poetic lines are divided by atnachs, and the editors put a nice space there. But notice this line, there's a little difficulty with where you divide the line. All right, but if you go, what the Masoretes seem to be saying is that this poetic line is a long one. All right, but it ends at metzo. Now, I only bring this up because the Masoretes tend to have more... A lot of times they overlap, but in comparison with modern scholars, Masoretes tend to have more longer, more uneven lines. So they're not as bothered by long lines, short lines. Notice the prejudice in more modern scholars is to have more even lines. All right, so a lot of times you will see them excising a word or misplacing a word for reasons of the measure. And sometimes you will see the editor of this text differ from the Masoretes by putting a space more in between words. So here, notice there's a space between yit palel and kol in this line. Because I think that what the editors are suggesting is that you divide this line into three small but more even kola. But the Masoretes seem to be saying, no, this is one long line that ends at metzo. All right? Now, you know, there's going to be debates about this, but I just want to point that out. So if you read it like the Masoretes, on account of this, let every pious man pray to you at the time of finding. Now, what does that mean, at the time of finding? Well, one thing you can do with it is see a connection with this with the Isaiah 55 passage. Pray to him at the time he may be found or allows himself to be found. And that's, I think, a good translation or a good understanding of this passage, so that the subject is kind of the unexpressed Yahweh. And so a lot of translations will translate it in a more passive sense. As we, Hebrew tends to, when there's kind of an unexpressed subject or an impersonal subject, to use not a passive form. So you can translate on account of this, let every pious one pray to you at the time he can be found. Something like that. So you notice you have to kind of figure out who the subject is and what the action is and what the situation is. And then you can move rock to the next line, connect it with the next line. So what you have here is an example of hippolage is what they call. The line is kind of misplaced. So rock then would have its more adverbial surely sense. Surely, l'shetet maim rabim. Surely, at a flood of many waters, pause, to him, lo yagi'u, they will not reach. The root of yagi'u is from naga. It's a hifil, imperfect, means to touch. And of course the subject then is the many waters. So on account of this, let every righteous man pray to you, at the time you can be found, or I'm not quite sure how to negotiate that. Surely at the flood of many waters, to him, namely to the chassid, they will not reach. Does that make sense? See, we've kind of negotiated our way through a pretty difficult verse, because you're not quite sure how to divide the line and how even words that have common glosses, okay, but there's a lot more entailed that's not expressed, as very often happens in poetry. Does anyone have any questions on verse 6? It's equally cloudy to everybody. Right? Mm-hmm. All right. Now notice where he moves in verse 7. Ata seter li mitzar tits reini. You, again notice the pronoun, you, and then notice the line indicates kind of a little pause or a little separation. That's what that indicates. You, a seter to me, a hiding place. Notice from satar to hide. So you, a hiding place to me, mitzar, from tzar, from distress. Alright. Tits reini, what's the root? Can anyone see it?
Natsar,
good. You guard me, you protect me. Call imperfect. So, you are a hiding place to me. From tsar, from distress, you keep me. Alright? Again, here we have some interesting syntax. Rane palate, pause. This is from the noun roan, which means a cry. You guys are familiar with the root ranan, to give a ringing cry or to cry out loud. So this is a plural construct. Cries of palate. See that form? It's from the root palat. What conjugation is it? Anyone see? It is a pl, to deliver. All right, and we're going to parse it as an infinitive. Okay, a PL infinitive. Cries of palate, cries of deliverance. Okay, teso veveni, that's from suv, it's a polel imperfect. We've seen that before. It means to surround. You surround me. So, you are a hiding place for me. From distress, you keep me. Cries of deliverance, you surround me. So notice again, as is common in Hebrew, we saw it in both prose and poetry, a phrase like rane palate in English, you have to add a preposition with. So again, you can have an instrumental sense or a sense like this in Hebrew without a preposition. And you're trying to figure out how it fits with the rest of the word. So with cries of deliverance, you surround me.
Strange place to put the
Anak. Yeah, it does. See, again, you're getting the Masoretic division, which, again, differs, I think, from what the editors are suggesting. The editors like short, and modern guys like short, even, core. Masoretic, my Hebrew guy at Hebrew Union said, the itkus is doggerel. Which means, I never knew what that meant for about 3 years. The poetic line is uneven. All right. So you are a hiding place for me. From trouble you keep me. That's where the Masoretic seem to be breaking. See, you got the Olev Yored there? Okay. Cries of deliverance. It stops there. Maybe it's for dramatic. You surround me. But it is very strange.
Yeah.
And that's why the editors and we have trouble with it.
In English, they usually link cries of deliverance with you surround me.
Yeah, with cries of deliverance. Right. With cries of deliverance, you surround me. Exactly. So you're right. In 7b, see, notice, well, there's no evidence. They don't suggest dividing it any other place. But it is a strange way that the Masoretic divide it from our way of thinking. Okay. But by doing it this way, notice what you have that Rane Palate. Really highlighted. I mean, it really stands out. Okay. Any other questions on verse 7? Okay, verse 8. As ki lekah ve'orakah bederek zu te lake. Now here, notice you have an interesting change of speakers. This is a Hiphil from Sakal. Remember, Sakal means to be wise or prudent. This is a Hiphil, so notice it becomes kind of a factative. I will make you wise. All right. Ve'oraka. Notice the root is from Yara, to teach or to instruct, and I will instruct you in the way. Zu is a poetic, like Asher. I will instruct you in the way which Telek you should walk, from Halak. So once again, I will make you wise, and I will instruct you in the way which you should walk. All right. Now who's talking? Seems to be Yahweh. See, notice how you kind of switch speakers here. Iatsa aleka eini. I will counsel you. This is from Ya'atz. Alright. And notice there's a hey at the end, and again you have this, it's a cohortative form. Remember, those heys don't always indicate cohortative meaning, but you do have the option. Let me instruct you. Let me counsel you. And you could do the whole phrase that way, actually. Let me make you wise, and let me instruct you in the way which you should go. Let me counsel over you. Eini. Here again, you have one of those just stuck-on words from our perspective, but again, it's kind of an adjunct. Let me counsel with my eye on you. I guess that's probably the best way to do it, with the aleka eini. So again, you're always asking yourself the question. In any text you're reading, how do these words and phrases relate to each other? What's the author's intention? How's the best way to render that in English? That's why translations differ and why you can have so much fun talking about the little nuances, because we're trying to read the evidence as best we can here. All right? Good. Any questions on verse 8? Okay, verse 9. Al tihyu kesus kepered ein havin. Do not be, that's from Haya, do not be kesus keperet, as horse as ass. Do not be as horse as ass. So that's where we get the, if it's a Hendiades, do not be as a horse as ass. No. But that makes sense, doesn't it? Ein a havin. What, notice the form of havin is from the root bean, to understand. Hiphil, infinitive. Notice the negative. The negation is ain. With non-finite verb forms, you tend to get ain, not all or low. So, do not be as horse as ass. There is no understanding. All right? And so notice again the infinitive I'm bringing out. Remember, infinitives both have verbal qualities and substantive qualities. So I'm translating it right now, at least, with a more, as more of a noun. With meteg, with a bit and resin and bridle, as edyo, as its ornament. But what do you call the stuff that you put on a horse? All the gear, you know, the tack. That's it. With bit and bridle as its tack, edyo. Live lom is a simple call, infinitive construct from balam, the lamin of purpose, in order to curb them, and you have to understand them. Okay? Not kerov, here is another infinitive, not to come near to you. Again, it's just stuck on there. Probably translate, or else, I'm sorry, bal is a poetic negative equal to low. So that they will not come near, so that he will not come near to you. See, again, you have to add those words. You're making the connections explicit, which in Hebrew you can surmise by the context. So do not be as horse as ass, in whom there is no understanding. Again, if you're going to add that, remember that's in parentheses. We're understanding that that's referring back to these animals. Okay, with bit, so see, notice, as a result, with bit and bridle as its tack, in order to curb them. So as not to come near to you. See, it's very terse. Does Does that make sense? Okay? We can kind of make our way through it, okay, but again, it's typical of what you're getting in poetry. Questions through verse 9. Yes?
Is that word bemetheg? Is that where we get the,
yes,
the metheg. Marks?
The metheg is actually a bridle which slows you down.
Okay.
See, that's why. Right.
So, is it...
Oh, it's links words. I'm sorry, which links?
So, I guess... I don't quite understand what verse 9 means.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Don't be like a horse harness because they have to have... They have to be restrained by bits and bridles.
I think so.
I think so.
See, I think what he, you know, in verse 8, he wants to instruct them in the way that they should go.
Yeah,
you can either resist it or not.
You should be able to repent on your own without having to...
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a good question. You know, what? How are verses 8 and 9 actually linked? So in verse 8, he expresses, you know, I want to make you wise and instruct you in the way that you should go and counsel you. And now he's kind of saying, don't be stubborn, don't resist. Like these guys that have to have all this gear to keep them in check so they don't come near you.
Or is it otherwise they won't come?
Or you could have otherwise they'll come. See, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you're kind of negotiating. You could have otherwise they'll come near you, or so that not. Exactly.
Is that a
wrong? No, I mean, see, right. See, that's a good question. I mean, how are you going to see the relationship between that last, those last words and the previous? And the translations actually, I'm glad you guys asked that, because the translations actually do differ in how to fill that in, how they're understanding the relationship. Exactly. So you're always kind of going to wrestle with that question, because you have to look at it also in relation to the whole thought of the passage. That's good. All right, good. Let's finish up here. Rabim makovim la rasha. Many pains to the wicked. Okay, makovim is just a noun. Okay, many pains to the wicked. Vehaboteach bayawe, but to the one who trusts, notice a participle used as a substantive, but to the one who trusts in Yahweh, chesed yeso vevenu. Chesed, grace, mercy, will surround him from suv, again a poleo. And then plus the suffix, third masculine singular. Okay? Now, simchu baranai, rejoice in Yahweh, vegilu tzadikim, and exult, O righteous ones. Boy, he hits all the big words here at the end. Chesed, tzadik, alright? Harninu, here's the root that... you know, from the noun in verse 7, Ron. Again, this is a hifil imperative. Give a ringing cry, Harninu from Ranan. Give a ringing cry, all Yishrelev, all you who are upright in heart, all the upright ones of heart. Okay. So again, notice the movement of the psalm from especially verses 3, 4, and 5, to the consciousness of his sin and what it's doing to him, to forgiveness. And you see that movement now when he's forgiven. This commonly happens. It seems as if now the message at the end of the psalm begins to talk to the rest of the people around him, see? As Yahweh himself seems to come through with his voice, I will instruct you in the way you should go. There's almost kind of a little wisdom genre in there. It's, you know, a little. It's interesting in a kind of a psalm like this that you get that. All of a sudden, you're in a kind of a wisdom genre kind of thing. So he's instructing now, going to exhortation and warning in verse 9. Don't be like this. And now verse 10. Look what happens if you kind of resist and you get yourself in the category of rasha versus tzaddik. So you're using these categories all of a sudden. It's really interesting. We will... Good. Any questions on the song? Okay, we'll stop here. And I think we go to 51 next, which is a biggie, which will take us a few times. It should be fun. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.